How's it going, everybody? It's been a minute, but we're back on Rockets Collective. We got Will, we got my boy Brandon Scott, new to the show. So you know we got to start off by introducing my boy Brandon. Brandon, let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, man, y'all can find me at Sports Radio 610. I've been there for about 6 years doing my thing, at Brandon K. Scott on X, formerly known as Twitter. And yeah, man, I'm on Sports Radio 610 twice a week. At the very least, you know, always trying to find a way to talk Rockets on a Texans dominated station. And there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, man, I'm real glad to be here with like a vibrant, lively Rockets audience and like really connected to the fan base. That's sometimes an issue with the radio. It's a little bit more of a generic fan base. So like you got Rockets fans there to be sure, but it's not quite like this, man. So I'm real excited and pumped to be here, man.
Yeah,
we Rockets for sure.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. I know. Yeah. Got to take a break from them Texans. They're struggling a little bit, but you know, hopefully they turn around. But yeah. Rockets.
Hey, it was a very easy switch over to the next day from Monday night to Tuesday. Let's just say I was glad to have it. It was a treat.
Definitely. We'll get started on this game that just went down. Probably, in my opinion, the craziest first game in the season I've ever seen in my life. Double OT, 1-point loss for the Houston Rockets. I'm not very discouraged by it. You know, some quirks from the first game of the year, but that's what we're going to be diving in on today and then a little outlook on the next few games. But, yeah, we're going to start on this first game. I'll start with B. Scott. Any immediate things you want to touch on from that game?
Hey, is Shingun going to be shooting a three now? Like, I'm curious, like, this is something I feel like a lot of us have been talking about for years to the point where I actually got bored with the conversation of Shingun getting a three. I thought the fact that his game had progressed as much as it had over the last several years was enough to where I was like, man, if he doesn't develop a three-point shot, I think he's a good enough player already if he just gets stronger defensively and kind of just refines what he already does. Is he shooting threes now? Like, That was a part of any little group chat that I was in or a part of talking about this game with other people that care about the Rockets. So that stood out to me, number one. Mm-hmm. The other thing was like how with Kevin Durant, obviously this is Kevin Durant's debut. We've seen him in the preseason, but this is his actual debut with the Rockets. And it was wild how he had like these two or three moments that were negative, you know, and like hurt the team, but like the whole entire game was littered with the reasons why it's great to have Kevin Durant on the team, to where like you'll live with that kind of rattle, to your point of like not feeling down about it or discouraged about it. Yeah, man, Kevin Durant had 2 to 3 like losing plays in the game that I felt like really kind of helped swing the game in the favor of Oklahoma City, and I was fine with it because I was like, man, this not only do you simply have Durant out there, but look at Shingun and what it does for his game, how it expands his game and just does so much for what's possible for everybody else around him and all of the players that we were excited about before Kevin Durant ever got in the picture. Mm-hmm. So, and then of course, and I'm sure we'll get to this, not to hog it all, but like the whole point guard thing is probably a little bit more of a concern than I was willing to give it credit for. Or credit to going into the season. Like once I saw it, you know, especially against an opponent like that, we're talking about the champs, obviously, in Oklahoma City. The point guard issue is something that I do feel like they can work through and work around. And I don't feel like there's like a perfect solution to it either. So like, I'm not, you know, I don't want to like be over here complaining about something that I don't have a solution for, but it did stand out at times to me in the game. So those are my quick hits.
To answer your first question, is he shooting threes now? I hope so. That's the answer.
bro, what was that? What was going on? And the confidence, like.
Yeah, that's the most confident I've ever seen him shoot.
Yo, what was that? What was that about? So, yeah.
Yeah. Will, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, I think the immediate takeaway, obviously, is just on a court that featured Kevin Durant, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren, I think even the biggest fans of both of those or all of those audiences would be objective and honest to say that Shingun was the best player on the court, which is pretty, that's pretty crazy to say like that sentence out loud. Like Alperen Şengün played in a high leverage I'm not gonna say do or die kind of game, but it was definitely like a high stakes game opening night, right? Ring mm-hmm. ceremony. Like the best player on that court was the Turkish dude. And a huge part of that was, like you guys said, it's the 3-point shooting. I think it was what, 5 of 8? Was that what it was from three?
Yeah. Yeah, he was 5 of 8 from three. Yeah.
Yep. So obviously he's probably not gonna take 8 threes a game, nor will he shoot, was that like 67% from three, something like that, or 62, mm-hmm. somewhere in that ballpark. He's probably not going to shoot that well. Not even probably. He will not. If he does that, he's just the greatest shooter of all time. So, like, he's not going to do that. But the fact that he is taking them, and, like, I think it's kind of important to, like, watch the type of threes he was taking. He wasn't just, like, catching and shooting, hesitate. He was catching that mug and letting it fly. There was a couple times where I was like, I don't know. I don't know if that was the pull. And then it went in. I mean, I'm like, you know what, man? If you got it like that, you got it like that. So, I think that was, it was really interesting to note that, like, he looks a ton more confident in it. And I mean, we talk about a guy who's been adding something to his game every offseason. If this is not something he's going to add into his game, I mean, once again, bro, I really don't know what you do with him. Cause you can't let him play you one-on-one in the post. You got to send two down there. Mm-hmm. If you send two, he's capable. He has the vision to make the pass. Your only real hope was that you could, like, maybe dare him to beat you from behind the arc. But if he's good for two of those a night, I mean, I don't know what you do. And another thing is he was 10-11 from the free throw line, which last season, I don't remember what he shot from free throw percentage, but
lower 70s.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd imagine it really wasn't the greatest. So 10 of 11 from the free throw line is obviously amazing. You get fouled that many times, make your free throws. He made them. So like, I think he just all around played an amazing game. The other thing that kind of stood out to me is, well, number one, Tari Eason and Reed Shepard were downright terrible, yesterday. That was, Tari was all over the place, man. I'll give Tari this much credit. He had the very crucial block to send the mm-hmm. Cavs to the first overtime period. So give him his props for that. But outside of that, he was bad. And he was so bad, in fact, that the Ime Udoka felt more comfortable leaving Reed Shepard, who was also very bad on the court. So, like, I think it goes to show you just how bad Tari was that, like, Reed, who was also very bad yesterday, was left on the court. I will give Reed this much grace. This is something I've been saying offseason since the Fred VanVleet injury. If you thought that Reed was just going to come in and instantly replace the production that Fred VanVleet gave us, I mean, I think you were setting yourself up for failure. I think you were giving Reed unrealistic expectations. He looked like what a guy who did not play at all his rookie season should look against the defending champions, against probably the best defense in the entire league. They have a bunch of guys who frustrate us. That's why, like, when I was pretty sad Fred got hurt, it was for games like that. So I'm like, that's when you need Fred. You need someone to be able to organize your offense and get guys into their spots and dribble past ball pressure, hit those tough shots. Like, those things that Fred does that I think Reed will one day be able to do, but expecting him to do it off rips, I thought was kind of unrealistic. So there's that. And then I'll just land my plane by saying, I think that the team as a whole is still learning how to play together, not just play together, but play with Kevin Durant. Cause that's obviously mm-hmm. a huge dynamic change for this team. Not just in terms of you're missing essentially 3 year starters from last season. But then you're also adding in someone who I think Kevin is probably I think he is the most portable star of all time. But even with that, it's an adjustment period to learn how to play with him, learn, you know, how he wants the ball, what spots he wants them in, when he wants screens, when he doesn't want screens, all that good stuff. And then on top of that, like I said, I think OKC is like one of the few teams in the league that are like uniquely designed to frustrate the Rockets. I think Lu Dort is one of the few guys. I don't think such thing as guarding KD, but I think Lu Dort is one of the guys who could really frustrate him. And they obviously had Lu Dort on Kevin Durant the entire night. So between the consistent pressure from Lu Dort, I think he was fouling KD a lot, honestly. But between that, and then the fact, like I said, they're still learning, right? And they're learning how to, like, Reed and the men are learning how to play point guard. And then we're learning how to play with them, with KD, with each other now. I think that's kind of what that looks like. So it was very messy. It was very ugly. It was very sloppy. And all that, you know, all that being said, we only lost by 1 point. And there were multiple different opportunities throughout the game where we could have sealed it away and won it. So losing sucks. I don't like losing games. I honestly can't wait for Friday so we can get back in the win column. But I think that it is some things to be encouraged about, that we looked that bad and were able to hang with the defending champs. So all I got to say about that one.
Yeah, I saw somewhere that we lost like 8 straight openers or something like that. That has to change next year.
We have not won since the 2017 opener.
Against Golden State?
Yep.
That's insane.
Every game since.
Yeah, that was the ring ceremony game too. We were supposed to end it today or yesterday, but Yeah, I'll speak on my takeaways. Obviously, y'all are talking about Sengun, right? The three ball, if that's there, that's a game changer, right? We're not going to ask him to shoot 63.5% from three. But keep pulling with confidence and keep the defense honest. That's going to change everything. We've seen Sengun since his rookie year. He's thrown that pump fake from three. I don't know how people were falling for it, but they were still falling for it. But now they definitely have to fall for it at this point in time. So, yeah, that's going to be huge for him. He's going to be getting to the cup a lot more than he already was before. His gravity got that much more better just from the shot alone. And I got a chance to rewatch the game today. His off-ball gravity is absurd. Even when he's posting up, you have the entire defense shifting over to his side. And that opened up KD. Whenever Steve-O threw that backdoor pass to Kevin Durant, he had that little short mid-range shot. Sengun was getting so much pressure on that. And then the rest of the year, that's just how it's going to be. Everything's going to go through Sengun. He's going to be the best player on the team. I talked to people about this recently, and they were calling me crazy. Like, hey, KD's on the team. I get it. KD's best talent on the team, but Sengun is doing everything. He's going to be the engine of this basketball team. He's going to be the reason they're extremely good. So, yeah, 39, 11, 7. Like, that's probably the best game in his career. If it's not, it's that Spurs game. But no, that was the most meaningful one.
I think it's better than the Spurs game.
Yeah, y'all talked me out of it. I said the Spurs game initially, but I had to back check. So, yeah, shout out to Goon there. First quarter came out hooping, right? 10 points. He took 7 threes. I wanted to even stop my entire analysis of the game. I'll get back to it later. But I want to talk about Amen because we didn't really talk about Amen Thompson. He was 0-7 from the three-point line. He walked into his foot was on the line. He walked into a deep shot earlier, and he hit it. And I was happy for the confidence in that shot. Preseason shot looked good as well. But, yeah, 0-7, I want to get y'all's thoughts, man. I mean, I like a confident Amen. I've said it on the Brian and Will show probably a million times. He's like 37% from the corner last year. He shot them very confidently. But above the break threes, he was like 11%, probably worse. But, yeah, I like the confidence. I was hoping he was kind of hitting them. Not 0-7, maybe 2-7, 3-7. But I just want to get y'all's thoughts. We'll start with any of y'all, whoever wants to chime in. What do y'all think about him shooting that many shots?
Hey, I like the confidence. Obviously, you want him to hit them. Yeah. But I just feel like the fact that he's shooting, like, he's not going to Ben Simmons the thing, and he's going to actually shoot the ball. Like, you can only make them respect you by shooting that ball, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't want him to shoot them out of games. And seven is a lot, like, really. Like, okay. it did feel like, y'all tell me if y'all feel different, but it did feel like, you know, not even feel like that they were baiting them to shoot that. They were, you know, they were for sure baiting them to shoot it. So it's like, okay, well, so if this is what it is, like, you gotta play that card, you know what I'm saying? Or call their bluff is what I mean, you know? And so I was fine with the aggressiveness. I like the four. I think it looks fine. I'm not really sure why he's not that good of a shooter. Cause like the form looks like something that they could work with. I mean, I know he's made of all the right stuff, and so he works at it. But yeah, no, I mean, I think it's just a matter of keep shooting it, like you mentioned too, Brad. Like he shot it just fine at times in the preseason, so I'm not super worried about it. Like it was a bad shooting night. Kevin Durant, for what it's worth, missed all his threes too. So you know what I mean? Like it's one of those things. Like you're gonna have some off nights, even if you're a good shooter. So I want him to keep shooting it.
I do too, personally. Go ahead, Will.
Also, I think the Miley issue with it is I think he could have shot him with more confidence. There was a couple of times where I saw him hesitate. And I feel like if you're open, and I mean, you got to shoot him when you're that open. Just shoot him, right? Catch it. Don't even think about it. Let it fly. I don't want him taking 7 threes. I think that's a bit too much. Even though they were open, maybe like absorb that space, right? You know what I'm saying? You don't have to settle for 7 of them.
Yeah.
But I don't want him overthinking it, right? So if the middle ground there is just shoot him with confidence. That's what it is. I thought outside of the fact that he didn't make a three, I thought for sure one of them would go. Outside of that, he didn't make a single three. I think he played a really good game offensively and defensively. There's still some things he has to iron out in terms of playing the point guard position. He's still learning how to do that for the first time at the NBA level. But I think he did a really good job, especially in crunch time, you know, taking the ball strong through Chet Holmgren's chest, getting downhill. He had some really nice passes in there as well. And I thought he played. I mean, SGA is just like, it's, I don't know. It's not, you can't guard him. Like, that's the definition of like, I think he might be the most unguardable guy in the league right now. Mm-hmm. Because I don't really know how you stop him when he's you know, able to create that much separation. He does a little, the little chicken wing kind of push off thing, but they let him do it and it creates space every time. And if he's the type of guy who's never going to miss from the mid range area, I mean, like I said, I don't know how you guard him. So with that being said, I thought Amin tried his best. I don't know how you play much better than that, honestly. But yeah, outside, there was a couple of positions where I thought he played like just an amazing defense, honestly.
For the I agree. Yeah. So,
yeah, and I thought their length just made them force them to make more decisions. Like, mm-hmm. you know, when they're moving the ball, like there's one possession where like you got a man on Shea, you got Alpi contesting, you got Steven Adams flashing on a screen, and I'm trying to remember who was the other and KD was out there. You know, and so it was just nothing but length. Obviously, they've talked about how this was one of the bigger starting lineups that we've seen in like 50, you know, 40, 50 years or however long it's been. Mm-hmm. But the length alone on top of, and I'm talking about length aside from Amin Thompson. So you got Amin Thompson on Shea and then all of these tall dudes just kind of forcing them to think twice and make more decisions.
Yeah, I was going to say this on the Amin Thompson front. I'll get to his defense in a second. But shooting-wise, yeah, I think they're going to fall. Not too many threes. One thing about Zion that he's really good at, they're going to leave him open, but he uses that lane to get to the cup. He's not powerful like Zion. He's still a little strong, but he can use that athleticism to hang in the air and get to the cup, draw some fouls. So I'd like to see him do that instead of taking seven. But keep it like three or four, and we're cool. But I think they'll fall this season for him. But, yeah, I want to speak on his defense. Well, you brought up his defense on Shea. He held him to 4-9 from the field. That's amazing on SGA for a guy who has a streak of 73 straight games, I believe, with 20 points. Just passed Michael Jordan in that consecutive streak list. So he's going to get a bucket. You're not gonna stop that. So I think Amin played excellent defense. The team defense was really good as well. B-Sky, I do recall that possession you're talking about. So, yeah, no, I thought the defense was really good from Amin Thompson. I haven't heard an update. I could be wrong. Maybe I was on the wrong side of Twitter today. The cramp was just a cramp.
That's all I've heard.
Okay, so we're on the same page. Yeah, so he's going to be good for that game against Detroit. So I'm not going to be looking forward to that. But I'll start up a question.
Hey, before y'all move on that,
go ahead.
I keep in my mind the memory of last season, him stuffing Shea at the end of the game at Toyota Center. Mm-hmm. Y'all remember that?
I did.
Like that was a precursor, you know what I mean, for what he's capable of against what is – what I think we'll just call the most unguardable player in the game. Yeah. I would agree. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just wanted to point that out.
No, for sure. I was going to bring up a question. It's going to be a hot topic. Ree Sheppard, right? We'll talk about, I mean, I watched back today. He was what, 3 of 11 from the field, I believe. It was bad. What was it? Do you have it on top of your head, Will? Whatever it was. It wasn't pretty, but in my watch back today, I will say this.
It was 3 of 11. That's correct. Yeah.
In the watch back, I do like that he was confident. Last year, he was not confident at all. He was so timid out there. He looked like he didn't know what he was doing. In the watch back, he was completely confident. He was taking every shot with confidence. They were poorly timed. Yes. It should be KD shots. Yes. I think my issue with the Ree Sheppard minutes is they should have been Kevin Durant shots in the moment he was taking them. At the end of the game, and he came in for Amin Thompson, I see KD at the top of the key, and Reed has got the rock, and he's kind of doing his own thing, and he's pulling with confidence. I'd like to see KD go get the rock in that situation and go get a bucket. He only took like 1-2 shots past the fourth quarter, and that obviously has to change. I'm sure they'll talk about that. That was the main issue. He didn't get a lot of shots at the end of the game. And you see the gravity in the last play of overtime. KD gets the ball near half court, and they double-team him, and Şengün has a wide-open lane to the cup for the go-ahead basket. That alone, that's all we really needed. But Reed was initiating, and he was kind of doing his own thing, and then, boom, he was going for it. What was bad was that turnover. No excuse for that. You got to yank him after that one. But I did like the confidence to shoot the jumpers. They obviously weren't falling. They got to fall better than 3 of 11. I did not think he played well. And to your point, B-Sky, earlier in the show, it wasn't pretty. Yes, I definitely agree. The Ree Sheppard minutes weren't pretty, but at the end of the day, I did like that. A change from last year. He was much more confident. The coaching staff has been preaching for him to be more confident on that end. But it's only optimism I have on that front. He has to be better or they're going to be in the point guard market. But, yeah, what did y'all think? This is kind of a Ree Sheppard and KD question. It could be tailored into a KD discussion because he wasn't shooting enough at the end of the game. And in my rewatch, I saw he just didn't get the ball from Reed. And in our live stream, they were saying KD needs to do a better job of sealing and getting the rock. What would y'all say?
Yeah, you know, I'm just curious if that was like, if the Reed aggressiveness is KD inspired. Like, if it feels like, you know, it feels like Reed has been empowered by his teammates to be more confident and to do the things that Brad, that you're talking about, like to not be timid the way he was last year. And I would say, to his credit, man, it's not like we haven't seen him go to Oklahoma City and play well, right? Like, his arguably his best game was there, you know, against the real actual champs. And so, like, I think one of y'all was mentioning earlier about, I think it was you, Will, who talked about, like, the expectations probably being a little bit too high and a little bit too elevated, given, like, just the, I guess, just the obvious logic of him filling that role to Fred VanVleet, or that void that's left by Fred VanVleet's injury. And I'm with you on that, but it just isolated to this game, I was expecting him to go and play well in this game, because I've seen him do it before, like play well against this team in that building. So, and of course, the circumstances were different. That wasn't to start the season. You know, that was deep into the season. You don't have the energy of, or didn't have the energy of, them raising the banner and getting their rings and all of that. Like, it was, it's different. But I got confidence in Reed. Like, it just in terms of, like, his overall player profile and, like, what he is, I'm not really comfortable with him as, like, the, you know, in that point guard role, right? Like, I feel like he's just kind of better off as, you know, a secondary ball handler and more of a spot-up shooter. And clearly there's pressure on him to now fill that role in some form or fashion. And so I'm curious about the fit. And if that's the issue, but I think that as far as, like, the KD Reed connection, KD not being as aggressive as he should have been, or as we thought he should have been, and Reed being maybe a little bit more aggressive than we thought he should have been, it feels like it's by design. Like, they're trying to get his confidence up. That was just kind of my read on it.
Yeah, I agree. And you can almost see the same with Jabari. He's a lot more confident out there too with his jump shots, but. Tail to that same question, Will, what would you say?
Excuse me. I actually think that the one time he did not look confident to me was in the overtime period. So it looked like a deer in headlights to me out there. But I guess where I differ from a lot of people is, like I said, I kind of expected that. I didn't really think he was going to immediately go out there in those high leverage moments and just rise to the occasion just yet. Because, I mean, undersized guards, you take a little minute to cook. That's what Reed is. So, I think the biggest thing for me, outside of the fact that he was getting, like, very much hunted on defense at times yesterday, like, I think that's kind of what led them back into the game, was Reed being targeted, which, once again, also, I want to reiterate, I think is a real indictment on Tari Eason, that in those moments where SGA is cooking Reed, Ime is just like, I cannot put Tari in right here. So, independent of that, right? But I think the other issue I had was in that overtime period. I guess I will give Kevin Durant some blame. I think he could have did a better job of making himself available to receive the ball. There's a couple of times where I'm like, oh, bro, like, go run point guard at this point, dude. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're the best player on the team, probably. Like, we're going to give you the ball, and, like, you got to do it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because they're doing a really good job of denying you the ball off the ball. Like, I think it was the best job of making it available to receive the ball. Like I said, also, Lu Dort was fouling the life out of him off the ball. So, like, I understand that perspective. Other half of it for me is, I thought Reed Shepard did a pretty bad job of taking those windows and getting the ball to Kevin Durant in that overtime period. There was a couple – I forget, it was one possession. I can't remember if it was the second or first overtime where they ran the play to kind of, like, get KD open, and KD ended up popping out. And, like, Reed, all he did was just kind of turn around and give it to him. It was probably going to look kind of nasty, but, like, it would turn to give him the ball. And Reed kind of, like, didn't see it, drove from the top of the key, like, around to, like, that left side. And I think he put, like, a fading midi, and obviously didn't go in. And it's like, okay, like, that we could do that, or we could get the ball to Kevin Durant. So,
agree. Yeah,
those are things that he could work on. But like I said, I'm not one of those guys who I think Reed played terrible yesterday. But I'm not one of those people who thinks because he played terrible yesterday that this is an example of him being a bust or we shouldn't have picked him. Like, to me, that's kind of what, I'm not gonna say we should have expected him to play terrible, but I expected him to struggle. I expected it to be rough. I expected it to be growing pains and for him to have to learn how to do it on the job. It's, once again, why, like I said, I think everybody out there was making it seem like when we lost Fred, it was just, we're good. Like, no, man, we're going to have to figure that out. And, like, I think for 90% of the regular season when we're not playing OKC, it'll be fine. But I think when we play OKC in those games, when we play them in the playoffs, those are moments where you're going to either really need Reed and Amin to be, like, developed, or you're, once again, like, just going to miss Fred VanVleet. So that's how I feel about that one.
Yeah. We can talk about Kevin Durant's defense real quick. I don't know what y'all thought about it. I pulled a stat. I was looking at – first thing I always do after the game, because they don't have the defensive sets right out the gate, is I go to see how the matchups look. And it's not always very telling, but as you mentioned, B-Scott, the length was a problem for OKC. Houston is going to run that zone. And when you have those guys with those 7-foot wingspans flying around, it's tough to get a bunch of shots up. But yeah, KD, when he's a primary defender, they were out there shooting 1-13 against them. And it's not really just lockdown defense per se, but you got a lot of really good contests up. And it's been a narrative on Twitter. Brandon, did you say you've been off Twitter recently?
I'm just not on as much. I still browse the timeline. I just don't post as much. I'm still on there though.
I got you. Yeah, I thought KD played really solid defense. I thought he did. They've been calling him a trash defender on the app for the past week or so, because he had tweeted out, check my YouTube. They've just been pulling up bad receipts.
He's 137 years old. What do they want from the man?
Yeah, he's not going to be no DPOY, first team all defense, but he's a really good fit, in my personal opinion, in this. Not even in my opinion. He is a really good fit for this Ime Udoka defense. So I thought he did his job out there. As well mentioned, it's hard to guard Shea. So it's tough that he bit on that last pump fake. It's a deep, midi turnaround fade. You almost have to let it happen. But it's tough. He's going to want that one back. But, I mean, outside of that, I thought he played a really good game defensively. Offensively, we'd love to see him be more aggressive, of course. Hopefully they get the ball more. But it was just good to see someone just knocking down shots in the half court at will. We just had to get more looks there. But that was me. What would you say, Will, though, defensively?
No, he played great. I mean, great defense. Even up until the point where he bit on the foul, it was great defense. It was textbook. Mm-hmm. He just fell for it. I mean, like I said, it's SGA. And honestly, if you said if he doesn't contest it, he probably makes the shot. But the way he was feeling at that point in time, he hadn't missed. He had, I want to say, 24 points in the overtime and fourth quarter period. So, like he was just in that type of zone. It was one of them things. So, great defense up until it wasn't, honestly. And I think that's kind of the story of how he played yesterday. It was just pretty good defense all around. I don't know. It's not really too much for me to say about KD's defense. I think he played pretty well.
Yeah, man, I feel like the big KD points were what you just mentioned, biting on the shot fake, of course, that one, at the end of the game. The timeout that they got lucky on.
Oh yeah, we did.
They got blessed.
They got blessed on that. That was one where, had they not, that would have been a really. I mean, that's a huge issue too. For it to be KD of all people, right? Like your stabilizer, your vet now, especially.
And I'll say this.
Being out there, yeah.
I'll say this. It was the whole team out there except for Shangun. I looked at the replay. Jabari's in the back. He's signaling for it. Tari damn near signaled for it. Shangun was like, bro, chill. I think that's what alarmed everybody. But yeah, go ahead. I was just saying, that was bad.
He had the, what was the free throw? I'm trying to remember what sequence in the game where he had the free throw that could have.
That was regulation, I believe.
Yeah, regulation would have put him up three, mm-hmm. And then, of course, Shea, I think, gets the two to tie it, right? So, like, he misses a key free throw. Has the timeout that they got bailed out on, and has the goes for the shot fake and the foul for the winning free throws, and then just the part where, and this is just my criticisms again from remember early on, I said, man, even with the bad plays, I was like, man, they got KD out there, man. Even with these negatives that I'm pointing out, I want to have that caveat out there. But I remember just this moment watching the game with my girl, and I was like, where is Kevin Durant? Right, like in the midst of them doing some of this stuff, I think the play that Will mentioned, or maybe it was you, Brad, who mentioned the play with Reed. There were a few of those where I'm like, mm-hmm. "Yo, what are we doing? Kevin Durant's on the floor now. It's time to get the ball to Kevin Durant."
Oh, yeah.
And y'all are either not doing it or he's not demanding the ball, and we need to have some kind of meeting of the minds and do that. Mm-hmm. So like, and that bothered me more than anything, more than the timeout or going for the shot fake against Shea of all people, like who doesn't. Mm-hmm. And of course, a missed free throw. Kevin Durant is one of the better free throw shooters that you'll ever find on the planet. So like that was it. It's like, give me more Kevin Durant in high leverage situations. You got to figure that out.
Yeah, if he takes 20 to 25 shots instead of 16, they win that basketball game. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. So they got to get him more shots. Like I said, I was happy that Reed was confident. He was overly confident, as we mentioned, but I'd prefer that over him being timid. But, yeah, we got to get the ball to KD in those situations. So we're on the same page there. I was going to say we're halfway through the show. So, I mean, if you haven't already, make sure to like, subscribe. We're going to be doing this weekly now. I know we were away for a month or some change, but we're going to be consistent. And drop some comments in the live. We're responding to everything we see. So we'll actually respond to this first one. Did y'all like the NBC production? Me personally, I'll say this. I was too young to see anything before 2002. I was probably 4. I was not watching hoops until 2005. So to hear that theme song, it hit differently for me. I thought it was amazing. I love the production. We were on stream, so I didn't get a chance to listen too much to Mike Tirico and Reggie in the halftime show, but I want to go back and listen to it. But I'm definitely excited that we have NBA on NBC. It's going to be better than TNT. Brandon, I know you're probably feeling some nostalgia.
For sure. All the feels, man. And it's not quite the same, but just the fact that they tapped into it. I know, like for me, I'm not a big Reggie Miller fan on the broadcast, okay? And I know it's kind of easy to dunk on Twitter and everything, but I actually thought like he was fine. I didn't mind this broadcast in particular. I don't know if it was because they were on NBC or because I do connect it to my childhood, but I enjoyed it. I thought the Michael Jordan element of it was like the only appeal that had was the nostalgia. Like some of his best moments were on NBC, and I kind of associate NBC with Michael Jordan because of that. And because I was at that age, you know, I was like, I guess 9 whenever he, you know, in 98, whenever, he, you know, he won his last title, Bob Costas and all of that. But like, I didn't really get a whole lot out of that other than, hey, it's Michael Jordan sitting here talking, you know? So like I could actually done without MJ. But other than that, I was cool with it. I enjoyed it for both the nostalgia and kind of like the new element of what I think NBC sports production looks like today, you know, kind of, you know, in line with what they do with football. Obviously, Mike Tirico calling the game and Mariga Taylor in the studio or doing the studio analyst or hosting work. So I enjoyed it.
Agreed. Yeah, go ahead, Will.
I thought it was great. I like the fact that it feels like they've really responded to the feedback of the fans over the last couple of seasons. I feel like a lot of the things fans have been talking about, I agree, one of the biggest issues with the NBA was the presentation, right? It didn't feel special. It just kind of felt like it was, all right, here's basketball, you know? And I feel like they did a really good job of like presenting it to you as if it is a pretty big deal. I mean, it should be. It's just open at night. It's the biggest stars in the world, like it should be that. And like we saw today, they came out and said they're going to return the finals trophy to the court during the finals. And I hope they put it on, I hope they put the logo back on the jerseys too, because I thought that was just like it made those games feel like they meant more, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? You can go look at a game from this year's finals, and it looks nothing different than the regular season version of that game. You know, like you can't see the difference at all. And so, like, yeah, like I think going the extra mile for that presentation and taking that care to like really, like I said, just put that production value into it. I think that goes a really long way. So no, I liked it.
Yeah, off the NBC production, I'm gonna be excited to hear Ryan Craig and Vanessa again. I love listening to them.
Friday,
yeah, Friday. That's gonna be the next game against the Detroit Pistons, and that'll. Going to my next topic, next few games for the Houston Rockets, we got Detroit, Brooklyn, Toronto Raptors, and the Celtics. I'm looking at that stretch. I'm looking at, again, you can't look ahead in the NBA. You can't just count wins, but I have high expectations for this team. I thought they played really good against that OKC championship roster, even though they didn't have J-Dub. But I'm expecting them to go 4-1. That's the hope. They should be going 4-1. They did that. They should not be losing to Brooklyn, Toronto. Boston with no JT. I don't know if Anthony Simons is playing already, but the Detroit game will be a good one. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, what are y'all looking for in this upcoming stretch after watching that first one? We can start with you, Will. We go back to B. Scott.
To win? That's how I feel about it. I want to win.
Yeah.
I hate losing. I think that we squandered a pretty good opportunity to win yesterday, even though it is the champs and they're really good. But like, man, I feel like we still could have won that game. And so obviously you got to make it up against the teams coming up next. I do think Detroit, sleeper team. I think they're actually pretty solid this year. I think Cade's taking that leap and solidified himself as a guy who will be on that all NBA team probably for the next 6-7 years. I made the joke on accident, but yeah, he's gonna be that guy, right? So like they're a really good team. So I don't like they're not like contender good, right? They're not gonna win a championship this year, but they're still good enough to where like obviously you can't. It's not the Wizards or the Hornets, right? You just can't walk in there and think you won the game before you even step on the court. And even in we lost to the Hornets in opening night last year, so. Right, you know, like it's one of those things where like you can never kind of just be too certain. So like I do think the Pistons are a team that we need to like go win with the right approach of like let's win this game, because you don't want to start the season over too. Like that would just be nasty. You want to get back in that win column, start building your record now, because like, I think one of the most important things for this team this season is you ideally do not want to have to play both Denver and OKC in the playoffs. You want to play one of them. And the only way to do that is to, you know, I'm not hoping injure nobody, but either Denver and OKC has to like get hurt and then like fall the standings, or we have to be like number one, which OKC is probably gonna be pushing a lot of wins. So like, that's easier said than done, obviously, but you want to at least be in that conversation. You want to be there. Cause if you can avoid playing Denver and OKC, they play each other in round two. You get the winner in round three. I mean, you know, maybe, who knows, right? You might still lose, but at the same time, it's like it's a lot easier of a path to the finals than having to go through both of them. And then on top of that, like hopefully they beat up on each other in that second round, so you get like the weaker version of them when they come out of the series. So yeah, I think you got to go and start taking each game right now. Like it's like we need these games. So
I'll say this real quick, and we can get to Brandon. I mentioned us losing the first game of the year for the past like 8 years, but last year starting 0-3 was nasty and that was unacceptable. And they still ended up being a 52-win team. So it doesn't mean
0-3 last year,
but we were 0-3. I'm telling you, and
I know we were 0-3. Ime's first year, we were 0-3 again.
Was it the first year then? Was it not last year? I could be wrong. Y'all correct me in the comments if I'm wrong.
So I know for a fact we lost to the Magic, Spurs, and Warriors in that order. Ime's first year. Last year, no, it wasn't, because we won. We beat the Grizzlies, didn't we?
Okay, good. You're right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. I was about to say. It was. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. You're right. Thank you. I was about to say 0-3 again.
Yeah, okay. I know we started 0-3 Ime's first year.
Okay, good catch.
Yeah,
okay.
No, we were 1-2. I remember we were 1-2 because we beat the Grizzlies and then lost to the Spurs game three.
Ah, yes. That Spurs game was bad. Yes. Okay. I recall. I was coming back from a homecoming.
We were like 6-4 at 1.2. Like it was. Yeah. We didn't like really go on a run until like later on. But I ain't gonna lie, bro. I don't remember what I ate for dinner yesterday, but I remember what game we played 2 years ago. So.
No, those poor starts will stick with you. But yeah, to my point, they got to get off to a better start. So again, they got an easy stretch coming up. They should capitalize on those. And then going to that Mavs game. That's gonna be the first real big one. I won't pass up on Boston in Boston. That'll be good. But then that Mavs one I'm looking forward to November 3rd. But yeah. Again, going forward, I want to see them get the rock to KD. Everyone else stay confident, but make sure your star player gets the ball when he needs the ball. That's just my main thing. But go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah, I think some of the stuff that Will laid out really was a good job of illustrating how different it is when you feel like you got a legit contender. Because now that every game matters, or since every game matters, the 82 game season is not monotonous. Like there is no monotony. Every game matters. And as far as like schedule watching goes, like we're talking about one of the top, what would y'all say? What would y'all say if you look at the Eastern and Western conferences? We're still talking about what, like a top 5 to 6 team in the NBA?
Yeah.
In the Rockets?
The Rockets?
Yeah, yeah, I would say even without Fred, I would say top five. Yeah.
So like they're as good, if not better, than pretty much anybody that's gonna be on this schedule. So like I point that out just to say that like I'm really more focused on the Rockets themselves as opposed to just the opponent. Like I want to see every opponent, right? Like I want to see, that's your chance. Since you watch every Rockets game, that's your chance to kind of scout the league and just see what's going on around the league. So I'm obviously excited about that. But in terms of just what I'm looking out for, it's a lot of the stuff that we talked about, like them figuring out the whole point guard situation or how they're going to get into their offense and just like figuring out the rhythm, really the whole Kevin Durant thing, like playing with Kevin Durant. We were talking about this earlier, learning how to play with Kevin Durant, first of all, and then just having the common sense to give him the ball in high level situations, like we mentioned earlier. Like those two things have to happen. And so like that's what I'm looking out for. I'm also curious about like lineup construction and how it varies from game to game. We only have like one data point, right, from the one game, but I'm interested in getting more, right, to see like how often are they going to do the double big thing, or is Reed going to get some starter, you know, some games where he starts? Is he going to earn his way into the starting lineup? Like how does that unfold, and like why? Like what does it end up looking like, you know, with these lineups? So I also want to see Tari get right, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, not a great in Tari and Reed for that matter. Right. I want to see both of them get right and be Tari specifically be the player that we've kind of grown accustomed to. And, you know, is a fan favorite for all the right reasons. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to these next few games.
100%. I wanted to jump to a quick question we had in the chat. Because speaking on Tari, of course, we haven't recorded him up, so I wanted to ask y'all about the extension. We got some new news today, so I'll dive into that. But before I'll answer this question really quickly from Sangoon, Reed Shepard related, do y'all want to see him grow at this role? Y'all ready to go get a guard? And would y'all want Tari to get more involved at the guard spot? I'll answer both those questions quickly. Tari. Yeah, we're on the same page. Tari, no, I do not want to see him get more involved at the guard position. Yeah, B Sky, sorry, reaction. That's a no for me. I don't even want to dive in on that.
He was saying, would you involve Tari in a trade? That's what he was asking.
That's gotta be what he's asking.
I have poor comprehension. My comprehension skills are poor. I saw people talking about it on Twitter though. But no, I would not. I would not do that. I still wouldn't do that.
I mean, I think. Will, you were making this point on Twitter, I think either yesterday or the day before, pretty recently, about like, man, the options are just limited.
That's what I was going to say.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And then in terms of what you would give up, you know, obviously got picks, but then Tari, like to actually make it work, like Tari would have to be kind of really your only play there. And I'm not that desperate to be trying to give up Tari to do it. You know what I mean? And then outside of that, it's not like you can go sign a quality, like a real difference making point guard for whatever they could afford, a few million dollars. Like these is kind of the breaks. Your point guard got hurt. We already knew they didn't really have no backup point guard. And so now they got to kind of figure it out.
Right. Yeah. Hey, I'll say that. Well, go ahead, Will.
Okay. All right. I want to share my screen. I don't know.
Cause I want to share. Go ahead. I'll take off this comment. Yeah.
Okay. It says it's sharing it. I don't know how to.
I can add it to the stage.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. That's what I want. So what I want everybody to look at is this is the current Rockets payroll. And I want to illustrate just how like borderline impossible it's going to be to trade for someone. Right. Mm-hmm. These are your trade options, right? Kevin Durant, you're not going to trade him. Shingun, you're not going to trade him. You cannot trade Fred. Not only because he just recently signed, but he also has that implied no trade clause. So meaning he's not going anywhere unless he wants to go there. And B Sky, you probably can comment on this. He'd have moved his whole family here. He don't want to leave, right? I don't think Fred signing off on a trade. You cannot trade Steven Adams because he just got extended. You cannot trade Dorian Finney-Smith yet because he just got signed. Cannot trade Jabari Smith Jr. for the entire season because he just got extended. You can trade Reed Shepard. So if that's what you want to do, you can trade Reed, but I'm pretty confident they don't want to trade him this early into his career. You could trade Amin Thompson, but I think he's about as close to untouchable as you can get besides like Shingun maybe. So he's not going nowhere. You can't trade Clint Capella because he just got it. He just got signed. Now at the deadline, you could probably trade Capella, but look, he's only making $7 million. Right. You can trade Tari Eason, right? That's a guy who, and I'll talk about it in a second, with the way he did not accept the extension that was reported today. Like, maybe you look at him and say that might be a guy you look to move off of. But even if you do, he's making about $6 million. And then these guys are all untradeable as of today. And they're also making vet minimum deals. So, like, you're not going to Like, you can't, you're not doing anything with $2 million a year. So the point I'm making is that it is, like, unless you're looking, like, I think Dorian Finney-Smith is probably, in terms of guys who has the salary needed to acquire, to trade, it's probably just him, because you don't want to trade Steve-O. You don't want to trade Shingun or KD. You can't trade Fred. You can't trade Jabari. You're not going to trade Reed. You're not going to trade him in, right? It kind of comes down to, are you willing to trade Dorian? And I'm not going to lie, if he's as good as I think he's going to be, you don't want to trade him, right? Like, I think he's going to be pretty good for this team. So, like, you kind of want to keep him and Steve on the same light. Like, these are just really good role players you should look to keep. So that kind of brings you back down to just Capella, who's making $7 million, and Tari, who's making $6 million. And like I said, with Tari, you only trade Tari if it's for a real upgrade. I think you'd prefer to keep him otherwise. Mm-hmm. And even then, like I said, that's still, $13 million if you round up between these two guys? Go look at how many guys in the league are making $13 million. Because that's another thing, too. We can't get more, right? You can't trade these guys. Like, I'm writing at $13 million. You can't go get a guy who's making $14 million because that puts you in the first apron. Any trade they make has to be down to the exact dollar or less. So like I said, you're probably, like, best case scenario, right? Best case scenario, you somehow find a way to aggregate, let's say $13 million from Dorian, the seven here, the six here, right? Best case scenario, you got, like, what? What's that? 13 here. That's 20, that's 26, right? Right. That might get you, that puts you in, like, the ballpark of, like, the Derek Whites. But the problem with that is Derek White is making, like, $28 million. Let me go pull it up. I want to say he's making like 28.
Yeah, all of those guys were making 25.
Making 20, 28 on the dot. Yeah.
And you can't do it. Now you know, I can't make that. And mind you, I think they can't even, I think the Celtics can't even aggregate salary. Yeah, they're second apron. They can't even aggregate.
Yeah, they can't do that. Yeah.
So, like, like I want to illustrate just how difficult it's going to be to pull off any kind of trade. And I don't think this will show me, like, the free agents, but there's nobody in free agency that's going to make a difference here. So, like,
well, I'll say this as well. And it's still going to be difficult with the, you know, aggregating salaries, but they should get that $12.5 million disabled player exception from Fred. So that helps. But even so difficult.
We got it. We just can't use it. And the reason we can't use it at all. We cannot use it at all because it'll put us into the first apron. We are $1 million away from the first. A vet minimum deal is $2 million. We are $1 million underneath it. There is no world where the Rockets sign anyone without letting go. Oh snap! Without letting go of, like, one of these guys, and they would have to do something.
Yeah.
They would have to trade them to a team that has a roster spot and cap space to absorb them. That is the only way we can sign someone. And like I said, the only way we can trade for someone is if it's within $1 million margin and salary difference. So, like I said, it is going to be incredibly difficult to pull off a trade. I saw someone in the comment section talk about the Sumo. I think the Sumo was making like seven. Let me go look at his deal real quick. If this thing will load, please don't fail me.
I use the Sumo from the Bulls, right?
Yeah, I
think he's making I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. I think he's making like seven. Where is he? Yeah. A little, one up to eight. So, like, yeah, you could theoretically look and move maybe Capella for him. Like, yeah, you maybe have some seconds, and like that would theoretically make a difference. Mm-hmm. But that's not, like, he's not a point guard. Like, Dosunmu is not the kind of guy who's gonna come in and organize the offense and do your Fred and lead impression. He's gonna be more of like he's like a guard wing, if that makes sense. Like, he has a little bit of ball handling. He can space the floor a little bit. He can get downhill, but he's, like I said, he's not a point guard. So
yeah, he's a combo, like, guard.
Yeah, he's kind of like that mix. So like I said, one, I would trade for Dosunmu. Like, don't get me wrong, I would take him on this team, but just in terms of, like, that point guard that everybody says we're missing, I want y'all to go look at all the point guards that are on the market. There's not that many of them, and the ones that potentially are, because like I said, the Celtics probably aren't even going to trade Derek White anyways. Like, we're assuming they would even be willing to trade him, which I don't think they are. So, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that many options. And then of the options out there, we just can't afford, like, half of them. So, point of the exercise, and I did this today, is just to illustrate it's going to be, like, borderline impossible to – at least as of today, right now. Obviously, something can change the deadline because the NBA is ever changing and guys pop up all the time. But as of today, there's no way for us to, like, really, like, project acquiring a point guard. That's kind of just what it is.
Can let me ask y'all both a question. because I'm curious what y'all think, because I think this is what it all really comes down to, and Will just did a good job of laying out why it's going to be next to impossible, if not exactly impossible, to make a move. How do y'all feel about Amen Thompson's prospects of actually growing into that role? Because so much is talked about with Reed, but and Reed is going to have to do some of it, obviously. But we saw what the starting lineup was. We saw how, and we talked about how aggressive Amen Thompson was, both shooting the ball and just kind of overall. I mean, that's his game, kind of just to affect the overall game, right? What do y'all feel about, or how do y'all feel about him developing into that role for as much as we talk about Reed? Like, I mean, he's obviously going to have to, like, to some degree. But are y'all, like, optimistic that, you know, him with the ball in his hands could actually be the option that every or the solution that everybody's looking for?
I do think it will be eventually. Right now, it currently isn't at a consistent basis. You see some stretches where he's extremely, you know, savvy with the rock. Like yesterday in the third quarter, he got the rock, dribbled right, had a nice spin move to the cup. That's when we saw him flexing on everybody. He made some solid passes. He's making spectacular passes last season. But yeah, the handle is the main thing with him. It was sloppy earlier in the preseason. And again, that's why they've just really been running through Shangoon. So I don't know if it's there just yet for Amen Thompson. It's still sloppy. Did you want to chime in?
Let me give you one of my favorite moments of the game. Okay.
Go ahead.
One of my favorite moments of the game was literally like Jamal Crawford is saying, "Hey man, they're not pressuring the men enough. They need to pick them up, you know, full court or whatever." Like, you know, kind of just, you know, giving his thoughts on the game. And like immediately, almost as soon as he said that, I forget who was guarding the men, but as soon as he said that, they did exactly that. They pressure him from, if not full court, three quarters court, all the way, you know, down. And a man just takes it straight to the rack, straight through his chest. And it was like, oh, well, I don't know. Oh, yeah, it was okay. Was it Cason Wallace? Whoever it was a victim in that moment. And so I'm like, okay, obviously that's not going to happen every play. But, you know, to me, over time, if you just kind of, right, and we got somebody saying you can't teach how to be a point guard, look, or do it so fast. Like, it might just be a slow burn. It might be some ugly growing pains. And hopefully it doesn't come at the expense of, like, winning games. Mm-hmm. But my point is I'm willing to, you know, go through the experiment.
I agree. I'll say this. As ugly as it was yesterday, they were right there and they should have still beat OKC the way everything unfolded. If KD makes that free throw, as you mentioned, there's a ton of factors that could have won them that game. As ugly as it was, with Reed not playing well, the point guard minutes looking sloppy, they can afford to, I mean, their defense and their rebounding and sheer strength to having Kevin Durant out there will win them a ton of basketball games. As we mentioned, I think they're still a top five team in the league, even without Fred VanVleet. So they can afford to give those growing pains through Amen Thompson and Reed Shepherd. But yeah, on the point of the trade machine, it's not fun going there after the first game of the year. We'll just want to have a good exercise. And I thought it was important.
I was about to illustrate that like, I think people ask for things and don't understand
realistic
what you're asking for. Like, and I've been saying it since the summer, man. Good guards are rare, and they're rare for a reason, because they are, when a team gets them, they pay them and they keep them. You don't see those guys hit the market.
It's literally why Fred VanVleet makes a fortune. But people when they sign him, they were like, "How are you gonna pay Fred VanVleet all that money?" It's like, well, he's a good guard, and that's what good guards
don't exist, man. They're very rare. Guys who can effectively run point guard on a high level, they get paid. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, no funny. I think the one name that somebody mentioned today that's like, you know what? I think that it financially works. The problem, I don't know if the team he's on would move him. TJ McConnell, I would love TJ McConnell. I just don't know if the Pacers are in a position where they would look to trade him, because I think he's like very important for what they do. I think he's like the best, cheapest point guard in the league. I think he's making like $10 or $11 million a year. So like, that's probably like the best it's going to get. And even then, like, so I think it'd be a bit difficult to pull that off, because Capella's making like seven. So you probably did like involve Tar in there some degree. So bottom line is it's difficult. And then somebody in the comment section said Shane Larkin. One, no, but two, like, even if Shane Larkin was an option, we can't sign him. That's what you're trying to tell y'all, but we have no money. A vet minimum deal is $2 million. We have $1 million left. There's no money more. So like, there's nothing we can do. The roster, at least as of today, is the way it's going to be until December 15th. And I'm going to keep it a bean. I don't think there's another guard coming to this team. I think they're like, there might be like a Dosunmu kind of like hybrid. That might be like the best case scenario. But in terms of a point guard, in terms of like a Fred VanVleet replacement, I don't think that's coming. I think that the Rockets are going to use this as an opportunity to really develop Minnie and Reed as their point guards. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like I think this is kind of it, man.
Yeah. I think it'll be fine. I hope Reese Shepard turns out fine. We don't have to get back to this trade machine. But yeah, ugly first game. Has a good opportunity to bounce back in these next few. We have about 4 minutes left.
How bad do you have to feel about Reese Shepard to be talking about Shane Larkin, though? Like,
that's not a good sign. That's why I was laughing. I was laughing that we had to.
Did I see that right? Like, what are we doing?
It's bad. He's looking at Eurobasket. not doing Shane Larkin, but yeah, hitting the trade machine just to illustrate that we can't make moves is based on Reese Shepard play. So again, I hope that he's able to pull off a game like he did in that preseason against Atlanta, and we don't talk about this. But yeah, I was saying we don't have that much time left. 3 minutes left. If y'all have any other questions, we can answer them. If not, we can close.
Beat ETL by 20.
Really? Atlanta's not a good basketball team. I'll say this. I went to that Rockets Atlanta game. I went to that Rockets Atlanta game, and they were bad.
Hey, glad you mentioned that. Help me understand. I know y'all saw the GM survey from a couple weeks ago. And one of the things that confused me really on there was like, I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but correct me if I'm wrong. I'm doing this off of memory. Somebody felt like Atlanta had the best offseason. But KD was the most impactful offseason acquisition.
Yeah.
And so like I couldn't square that. And then I'm like, okay, the best thing that Atlanta did was get Porzingis and Nikhil Alexander Walker. I mean, so what do we like? I was just confused on what that GM survey was talking about. You know, I'm pretty sure that's what it said, and I was confused by that, how Atlanta had the best offseason.
Yeah, I'm confused with you. They were good pickups,
I think they didn't have a better offseason than we did, but they had a really good offseason. Why I'm kind of
No, I was just saying, like better than better.
No, they didn't have a better one than we did, but they had a really good offseason, though. I think the only team that you could maybe argue, I'll say the only team you could argue had a better offseason was the Denver, and I still think it's us. I think we had the best offseason, but maybe I'm biased. I think Atlanta should be. They should not be losing by 20 to the Raptors. That's ridiculous. They should be a lot better than that.
I'll say this as we close. It was reported today that Tari was offered $100 million. I'm curious to see what those contract incentives were for him not to answer or to not go with that contract. I'm assuming it was probably the 5-year, $100 million with some injury clauses for him to not accept it. I'm curious to see what y'all think. We did have one last question here. Do y'all think Tari has the capability to get together while being in a contract year? I do. B. Scott mentioned it. I think he'll get back to doing what we all love about Tari Eason. Very big energy guy, perfect off the bench. I think he gets back to that. He just has to hit the three balls. That's important. It was ugly in the preseason. I'm hoping he makes it in the season as well. But I think he pulls it together. But I just hope he's not trying to do too much out there. That's my take.
Yeah, I'm not worried about his game, but I am worried about, like, I'm just more so curious as an observer about the whole contract thing and how that's going to play out. The restricted free agent market and just what that looks like for him. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not trying to be his advisor or anything, but I am curious if that's true, if that's what he's offered, what would have been his reason not to take that, you know? And he's obviously betting on himself, and so I'm rooting for him in that bet. But I don't know about that.
Yeah. Will, what would you say? And then we'll close.
I need more game sample size. I need to see more.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I'll say this. We're coming to the close. First Rockets Collective show in a long time. It was the first one with B. Scott, and it was a good time talking to you. It was my first time actually chopping it up with you about Rockets hoop. It's on 610 radio. Obviously, the brother is knowledgeable. So I'm excited to keep talking to you, weekly, on a weekly basis about this Houston Rockets team. Hopefully we come back on the next show to a few wins, nothing but wins. We have some good discussion. But
we play next week,
Do we? If not, we'll be recording on Tuesday.
I think we do. Yeah, we do play Wednesday.
Then we'll be back.
Jesus.
5:30 what?
Houston time.
Huh? Really?
We play at 5:30.
Okay, I'll look for that. But we'll be back next Tuesday. Before we go, I got to pass it off to B. Scott one more time. I'll throw his banner up so y'all can see his name and everything, at name on Twitter. But go ahead and sign us up, Brandon. Let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, man, at Brandon K. Scott, man. And I'm on Sports Radio 610 twice a week, Wednesdays at 4:40 on the drive, Fridays on In the Loop from 11 to noon. Those are Central Time, so y'all check us out.
Sounds good. That was an episode of the Rockets Collective. We'll be back. Thank you guys for watching.